It appears the British are meddling in American politics.
CNN has learned that British and European intelligence intercepted communications between Trump associates and shared those communications with their U.S. counterparts.
It was the persistent rumors of the dossier that had Sir Andrew Wood most concerned.
About British spy stuff.
So you're saying that the British used their version of the CIA to wiretap Donald Trump's phone?
The future president of the United States is under Russian or any other tutelage.
There's so many British intelligence links to our domestic Russiagate scandal.
The retired ambassador to Russia was concerned enough that he met with Senator John McCain at a security conference last November.
How did a British former Bernie Sanders field organizer wind up as a key staffer at a military intelligence front?
Effort to infiltrate American politics by this British operation called the Integrity Initiative.
The former Bernie field worker has been outed as part of a British military intelligence influence operation. What? He's a 20-something British citizen with no publicly acknowledged experience in intelligence work. There are some unusual details in the young staffer's bio.
We begin tonight with federal authorities now revealing what they say was a plot to kill Donald Trump.
A British man is in custody this morning after claiming he had plans to assassinate Donald Trump.
A complaint obtained by ABC News claims Sanford, who has a British driver's license, had been planning to assassinate Trump for about a year.
As does his suddenly transition from progressive politics to a staff position at a military-backed propaganda farm. What? So he went from working with progressive politicians to working at a military-backed propaganda farm? Maybe he was working at that propaganda farm all along.
We learned about a collaboration between Samsung and MI5, the British intelligence, to allow MI5 to watch Americans in the United States when the television set is off. Wait a minute is right.
What we have here is not a Russian interference in the domestic affairs of the United States of America, but rather a very directed interference on the part of the British Empire. We are in a situation where the British, to preserve their bankrupt financial system based in the City of London and in Wall Street, is committed to bringing down the U.S. president. The British Empire, which historically has been committed to massive population reduction, genocide, reducing the world's population from current level of more than 6 billion to 1 billion. That empire is willing to bring the world to the brink of thermonuclear war. And that is the underlying issue which is behind the current attempt to carry out a coup against the President of the United States. Now, the evidence of the British involvement is transparent. Donald Trump announced his presidential campaign on June 16, 2015. There was an article which appeared in The Guardian, printed on April 13, 2017. And what they say, British intelligence first became aware in late 2015, that is just months after Donald Trump announced his presidential campaign, of what they call suspicious interactions between figures connected to Trump and known or suspected Russian agents. The GCHQ kickstarts the FBI investigation of Donald Trump probably within days of his gaining the Republican nomination in July of 2016. And what this article says is the FBI and CIA were slow to appreciate the nature of the alleged contacts between Trump associates and Russians. They also then report that Robert Hannigan, head of the GCHQ, passed material in the summer of 2016 to CIA Chief John Brennan, and that Brennan used this information to launch a major interagency investigation. So this is the intervention on the part of the British intelligence into the U.S. elections. Now, add to this the dossier which was prepared by so-called former MI6 agent Christopher Steele. This has functioned as the roadmap for the FBI's investigation. Copies of it were given directly to the FBI, if not by GCHQ, by MI6. And we know that John McCain gave a copy to the FBI.
Is that the whole Russiagate coup against Trump was not primarily an operation involving the Obama administration and the Clinton campaign and the heads of intelligence of the United States. They were a happy part of it, but that the whole operation was designed by British intelligence years ago. As a matter of fact, the first traces of this go back even before Trump was anywhere in the vicinity. There was on the 18th of December, the House of Lords published a report, which I think is really absolute must reading for anybody who wants to understand the strategic situation.
To a House of Lords report, which was published on the 18th of December, less than a month ago, which is called United Kingdom Foreign Policy in a Shifting World Order.
Now, my crime story is structured around two very recent events, the House of Lords report, and the second is the exposure of something called the Integrity Initiative. That's a British military information warfare outfit that just fortunately for all of us had a lot of its internal papers posted all over the internet. And you should think about the Lords report as kind of giving the actual policies of the empire. And you should think of the Integrity Initiative, the people who actually convey these intentions and how you're supposed to perceive them, as kind of the enforcers of this view. And they create propaganda. And that propaganda right now is being directed at the United States in the form of an attempt to incite what they call the better martial instincts of the U.S. population towards war, particularly with Russia. And when you look at the overlaps in personnel between the Integrity Initiative and what we know about the British circles who actually were involved in running and are involved in running the coup against Donald Trump, these are particularly circles around Sir Richard Dearlove, who's the former head of MI6. We'll be able, given what we now know from this wonderful internet dump, we'll be able to recast and look at the story, which everyone's been told, about the British and the 2016 presidential campaign, I think in a very different light. The story is that the American public, you, got really jerked around by our age-old enemy. That's the story. The Lords purportedly are looking at how the British Empire is going to adjust to Brexit. Don't get me wrong, they're still incredibly freaked out that the event even occurred. And a big part of their report is devoted to the idea that they can prevent any such exercise of democratic franchise within the population from ever happening again. That is one big part of their report, how to control the internet and people's access to information. They say, and I'm going to put this in boldface, that the vote was caused by, quote, people's access to information boosted by instant connectivity on an unprecedented scale and speed. Governments, therefore, are being forced to respond to, quote, short-term demands of their citizens who have been empowered by their access to information and opinion. Now, that may seem to everybody to be a pretty weird thing to say. In other words, the reason why the revolt happened is because people knew too much. But this is exactly a line which has been said many, many times before. The first time I think I ever heard it was way back in 1975 when a guy by the name of Samuel Huntington wrote a report for the Trilateral Commission called Crisis of Democracy. Now, Huntington, as you may know, is the author of the notion, the Class of Civilizations, you know, the whole theory that set the Middle East on fire. And he's also the inventor of the term Davos Man, which he basically uses to celebrate globalization. But in this 1975 report, Huntington said that democracies only work when large swaths of the population are apathetic. He really said that. And in that report, he said that the empowerment of African Americans by the civil rights movement was therefore, and remember that had just happened, a clear and present danger to political stability. The Lords go on to say that this overbroad, and that's a quote, access to information has led many in the base, which is what they call the population, to believe in conspiracy theories rather than anything governments say. You may have heard Barack Obama say this repeatedly in 2016. Conspiracy theorists, according to the Integrity Initiative, include anybody who says that the government's explanation of 9/11 doesn't cut it, that the U.S. intervention in Syria and Libya openly supported terrorists, that the Ukraine coup run by the British and the U.S. State Department had a major neo-Nazi component, and many, many other truths about the very real Anglo-American genocide and foreign conspiracies which have dominated the history of the last 50 years. These offensive truths, the conspiracy theories, are, of course, now readily available or have been on the internet. And cyberspace, or the internet, is the realm which the Lords declare in their report that they now have to dominate and control. Now, they basically make clear that they're out to, in other words, kill the activation of the citizenry, which we saw in 2016 in the United States and also in 2016 in Britain through the Brexit vote. So that's one major focus of the report. We've got to enter the domain of propaganda, and we, the empire, have to control propaganda and shape the way people think in its entirety. They openly say in the report that the special relationship exists in the defense and intelligence relations between Britain and the United States, which are largely, they say, under the surface and not particularly public. And they say that this special relationship is particularly alive and well in the U.S. Congress. And they clearly say that this special relationship can handle and subvert one term of a Donald Trump presidency, but not two terms of a Donald Trump tennis presidency. Richard Dearlove, the guy I told you about who runs Christopher Steele, has been running around lately and saying, you shouldn't really worry too much about Donald Trump because I can guarantee it, he's gonna be a one-term president. This is all pretty shocking to most people coming from a foreign power, but they're fairly open about it. And they fairly openly state this in this report. Now, with respect to the Russians in the report, they say the trick is to keep them a failing economic power. By that, we make NATO into a monster propaganda and military operation after we leave the European Union. And hopefully, the result of all that will be a change of regime. They say about China that we're going to co-opt them. They say we, the British, as opposed to the idiots in the United States, participate in the Belt and Road and the Asian Investment Bank. And we're confident that we can manipulate and subvert these initiatives to our ends. And they mention in passing the historic tensions between China and India, which if you read between the lines means we have an obvious way to exploit the situation and divide and conquer between India and China. So that's what they say in the Lord's report. Here's the imperatives: destroy the potential of the four powers and make people docile and crazy through propaganda and outright censorship. That's the message which gets conveyed totally when you turn it into its activist mode, which we see when we look at this thing called the Integrity Initiative. Now, on November 23rd, a group which called itself Anonymous, they began posting documents from the Integrity Initiative on the internet.
More revelations of a shadowy alleged conspiracy involving NATO, the UK Foreign Office, and British intelligence to distort public perception of the world around them. The Integrity Initiative has been identified in the past few weeks by the purported anonymous organization or collective, which released this video on YouTube.
Britain has in fact created a large-scale information secret service in Europe, the United States and Canada, which consists of representatives of political, military, academic and journalistic communities, with the think tank in London at the head of it. As part of the project, Britain has time and again intervened into domestic affairs of independent European states.
Now, Americans might be familiar with Operation Mockingbird. It was revealed in the 70s through the Church Commission when the CIA was actually making covert payments to hundreds of U.S. journalists during the Cold War. This is very similar. There was an obscure think tank called the Institute for Statecraft in the UK. Its internal email servers were hacked. The communications revealed the existence of the Integrity Initiative, which was covertly backed to the tune of over $2 million by the British Foreign and Commonwealth Office, which oversees the main foreign intelligence operations of the British government. And what they had done was form these little clusters of journalists and pundits and pseudo-experts across the West, including in the U.S., to coordinate their messaging campaign. And they're very clear in these documents about what they want. Number one, they want to get the West, and especially the U.S. and the U.K., on a permanent war footing against Russia. And number two, smear anyone who gets in their way. And now they're coming to the U.S., and as we've seen from the latest release of documents, the Integrity Initiative's director, who is a military intelligence colonel in the U.K., Chris Donnelly, is having high-level meetings with U.S. government officials and journalists in the U.S.
And these documents show that this is a rapid response black propaganda information warfare operation, which is presently targeting Russia, China, Western Europe, and us right here in the United States. Since that initial posting, there have been three other document dumps, the last one on January 4th. Now, this initiative is a part of something called the Institute for Statecraft. It's a British NGO, and it receives 95% of its funding from the British government, from NATO, and from our State Department. It's housed in London, right next to the International Institute for Strategic Relations, which, you, if you know your British empire, that's the place that all foreign policy and imperial policy normally gets dictated. The building they're in once housed the Knights Templar, for you historical buffs, and was the London home of William Astor. But essentially, the Institute itself has an official address in Scotland in a completely abandoned building. So ever since these things got posted, there's been tons of reporters going to the actual place where this place works, and all of them being brusquely escorted off the premises with snotty British officials essentially saying, you can't go there. This group also got a significant recent cash donation from Facebook. It's going to get tax exemption here in the United States, if you can believe that. And it plans on targeting major cities here, according to the documents, not on the coast, since that, they say, is already taken care of in terms of their objectives. Probably the plan is to concentrate in the presidential battleground states for the 2020 elections. Remember, Donald Trump cannot get a second term if the empire is going to survive. In the very first document posted on the internet by Anonymous, the Integrity Initiative brags that they just derailed the nomination of Pedro Banos to head Spain's Homeland Security Department based on a two-hour smear campaign conducted by their networks claiming he was too soft on Moscow. Now, the initiative functions through what it calls clusters of journalists, military and foreign office personnel, academics, and lobbyists within almost every European country, the United States and Canada, and it's right now looking to expand to the Middle East. The way it works is people get alerts basically run through the Foreign Office and through all the British embassies to take actions whenever they have a need to essentially do someone in through a slander or propaganda operation or similar activities. Most of the clusters for Britain and the United States are dominated by people from the Atlantic Council, which is the premier British think tank in the United States, the Jamestown Foundation, the Center for European Policy Analysis, and other similar sort of spin-offs from the National Endowment for Democracy. The Atlantic Council was where the Lords convened a hearing for their report when they visited the United States. It's also the home of this something called the Digital Research Lab. The Digital Research Lab is where one Dmitry Alparovitz is located, the guy who leads CrowdStrike, and that's the company which manufactured the fake story about Russian hacking of the DNC and John Podesta. It also houses a guy by the name of Ben Nimmo, and he works both for the Integrity Initiative and the Atlantic Council. And he's written a story a day of fake claims about how Putin has these absolutely monster cyber capabilities capable of brainwashing whole populations by their use. The Digital Research Lab of the Atlantic Council also was recently hired by Facebook to police and censor users of the Facebook platform.
Facebook now has become embedded with NATO.
After the election, as you point out, they dragged Zuckerberg before Congress and they pointed their fingers and yelled at him, "How dare you let some Russians take out some ads?" And if you remember, the ads were these crazy things about who would Jesus want to win or something. Most of the ads were taken out after the elections, even though they wanted to claim that it was to influence the election. So the whole thing was bogus, but they wanted to take this guy to the carpet and say, "You have better crack down on your users or we're going to get you." It was what the government said to him. So I said, "What do I do? I don't know anything about this, as you say." So turning to the experts, the Atlantic Council.
At the center of all of this, basically you've got other people in here who've also played a major role in the coup against Trump. You've got Ann Applebaum of the Washington Post, Ed Lucas of the Center for European Policy Analysis, Bill Browder, who we've written about extensively, and not surprisingly, in the Integrity Initiative, you also have Sir Andrew Wood, who is a functionary of Orbis Business Intelligence, which is the firm founded and run by Christopher Steele. Andrew Wood figures quite large in the actual operations of the coup against Donald Trump. Now, the way this works is these guys use propaganda with two targets, both the government itself and the general population. In other words, what they do is they lobby governments on behalf of policies while being disguised as private parties, while they themselves are being paid as a think tank by the same government. So the Institute's media contacts, of which there are many, then talk about this debate, which the Institute has generated within the government, and then spread that out to the general population through media stories. This is kind of like a circular churning of the media. It's something that Obama's former security advisor, Ben Rhodes, called creating a public opinion echo chamber. Now, this methodology, you can see how it works because the British have been doing it in its present kind of supercharged form ever since 2006 in a full bore kind of way. And that began with the claim that this British expatriate from Russia named Litvinenko was poisoned using polonium and it's been going on ever since. We'll get back to the Litvinenko poisoning when we talk a little bit more about Christopher Steele. The Institute is led by a guy by the name of Christopher Donnelly, and he's a very high-level British military intelligence officer with an impressive career in NATO, the British Ministry of Defense, and in military destabilization operations worldwide. The guy is obsessed and totally paranoid about Russia. He claims and laments that Britain and NATO are not equipped for war with Russia, and he proposes to change that by hyping the Russia threat both to governments and to populations. He's kind of like a really, really even more deranged Dr. Strangelove. The Institute papers, which have been posted, feature a discussion between Donnelly and a guy by the name of Sir Richard Barons in October of 2016, in which Donnelly says, we really need some shocking, horrendous event which will wake people up to the Russian threat. Think about that in terms of subsequent British actions, in terms of Syria, and in terms of the Skripal poisoning, and think about that in terms of their reaction and the way that the whole Donald Trump coup story has evolved. It turns out that the initiative have targeted leaders of their own country. Remember, this is an NGO funded by the British government. They've run a smear campaign against the Scottish Nationalist Party and other domestic opponents of the powers that be in Britain. The papers also show that a guy by the name of Simon Bracey Lane, an Institute fellow, came to the United States and infiltrated the Bernie Sanders campaign in Iowa in 2016. The Institute also claims that the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein in 2016, was a Russian pawn, something which was echoed by Hillary Clinton. Now, there's a recent post by Max Blumenthal, who has done terrific reporting on the Institute Post, and he, in the last couple of days, has posted a whole story about what they're doing in the United States. And in his post, he notes that the papers which have been posted say that the Institute's aims here is to create a new generation of what they call information warriors. And to that end, they've hired a guy by the name of John Rendon to train a whole bunch of young people to be, quote, perception management specialists. Rendon, if you know your history, is known as the guy who sold the Iraq war. He handled the publicity for Ahmed Chalabi and the Iraqi National Congress, along with other Washington PR firms. That's his claim to fame, the man who sold the Iraq war. BuzzFeed, which infamously published the Christopher Steele dirty dossier on Donald Trump, is listed as a very friendly media source in the papers recently posted to the internet. When Donnelly came to Washington, he was shepherded around by someone named Ann Botter. And if you look up her pedigree, you see that she's a former vice president of the Atlantic Council, and otherwise, all of her pedigrees, all of her LinkedIn profiles are to British institutions. You see that he visited the Center for Naval Analysis, which is a government-funded U.S. project, but which is also a key contributor to the Lord's Report. And we see that he also visited the John McCain Institute's executive director, a horrible guy by the name of Kurt Volker, who now serves as the U.S. Special Representative to Ukraine. He also spent a big amount of time at the State Department's Global Engagement Center. This is a center which was set up in 2016 by Obama and the National Defense Authorization Act, specifically to confront Russian disinformation in the United States, and funded to the tune of millions and millions of dollars by Congress. The full load of money has been given to the State Department's Global Engagement Center. And they're now up and totally functioning, and functioning in conjunction with this Integrity Institute, which I'm outlining to you now.
Global Engagement Center. This was created by the Obama administration in 2016, supposedly to counter Islamic State propaganda. Its mission has shifted, supposedly to counter Russian and Chinese propaganda. But is this Global Engagement Center creating domestic propaganda in the name of countering foreign propaganda? Here's what Richard Stengel, the man who helped create and oversee the Global Engagement Center, had to say about propagandizing American citizens.
My old job at the State Department was what people used to joke as the chief propagandist job. We haven't talked about propaganda. Propaganda, I'm not against propaganda. Every country does it, and they have to do it to their own population, and I don't necessarily think it's that awful.
That's the very same Richard Stengel who appeared on MSNBC on Thursday warning about Russian propaganda.
So there's a whole elaborate Russian ecosystem that we've really seen highlighted since Donald Trump has become president.
State Department, $40 million cash infusion to what essentially is a troll farm. It's a place where they will create disinformation to fight disinformation. And the reason this is in the news is because the Pentagon is sending over $40 million to assist in funding this. It's going to more than double the fund. It's called the Global Engagement Center. So that means that the U.S. will be creating propaganda overseas, manipulating media overseas, and creating a lot of its own disinformation and meddling.
Now, at the first U.S. event held by the Institute, that was in Seattle, once again, we find, according to the papers, Simon Bracey Lane, the guy who infiltrated Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign in 2016. And at that event, Simon Bracey Lane reads remarks from Chris Donnelly in which he says, quote, "The West is no longer in a peacetime, rules-based environment." So they're here trying to recruit what they call active warriors. The Institute's public documents include a proposal by the French company Lexfo, seeking funding for the Institute for what they call, quote, "an offensive online influence campaign." And this online influence campaign includes a proposal for counteractivism through, quote, "negative PR, legal actions, ethical hackback, etc." The proposal states that it can launch hundreds of news pieces a day and offers to edit Wikipedia articles. The French company's proposal right here and exposed is, of course, reminiscent right now to people who are following the news of the recent scandal here involving the cyber warriors at New Knowledge, the U.S. corporation run by former Obama staffers who got caught openly meddling in Alabama candidate Roy Moore's campaign for the U.S. Senate. They got caught days after they had been endorsed as experts on Russian disinformation activities in the 2016 U.S. election by the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee. That is just when Mark Warner and his brother in crime, Richard Burr, were hotly trotting out their nonsense about Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election. The New York Times published an internal New Knowledge document about actual electoral interference, not by Russia, but by New Knowledge in the Alabama campaign. Among the things these guys did in Alabama was to manufacture a link between Roy Moore's campaign and the Kremlin by claiming that thousands of Roy Moore's Twitter followers were Russian bots. The internal report cited by the Times contained the admission, "We orchestrated an elaborate false flag operation that planted the idea that the Moore campaign was amplified on social media by a Russian botnet." New Knowledge did also a whole lot of other dirty tricks to swing the election to Moore against Moore online. To give you a sense a little bit more of this, one of the New Knowledge experts is a guy by the name of Jonathan Morgan, who was once a special advisor to the Obama White House and the State Department, and he's currently a contractor for DARPA. Post-election, he ran his mouth incessantly about how the Russians engineered Hillary Clinton's defeat. Now, the tranche of documents that Anonymous released on January 4th seemed to involve mostly the Sergei Skripal poisoning hoax in Britain. The Institute labeled their activity here something called Operation Iris. That's a quote. A previous Anonymous release of Institute documents included the name of Christopher Steele's business associate and Sergei Skripal's MI6 handler, Pablo Miller, on a contact list for Christopher Donnelly. On this list are the political guy from the government who handles the scientists at Porton Down, which is the UK's chemical weapons facility, Pablo Miller, who was Skripal's MI6 handler and the partner of Christopher Steele, the BBC, and representatives of the British Ministry of Defense, the Foreign Office, and the US Embassy. Craig Murray, who was key to exposing the entire Skripal poisoning hoax, wrote back to Anonymous and said, look, this looks to me like this is a list of people who are deeply involved in the Skripal hoax. And it turned out that he was correct when they released these documents on January 4th. Their media campaign about the Skripal poisoning was designed to create popular demand for even harsher actions against Russia by the British government. And they planted articles all over the world blaming Putin and Russia for the Skripal poisoning. The journalists that did this were all paid by the Institute and published multiple articles in the British press supporting the, let's call it the theme, Putin did it and it should be war. That was the line promoted by Operation Iris. The initiative characterized the official British response, if you recall it, as weak. Ben Nemo is perhaps the most famous guy who works for both the Institute and the Atlantic Council. And he has published all sorts of nonsense about Putin. He made the relatively preposterous claim that Putin has weaponized even jokes. Nemo authored it 2017 Guardian piece claiming that Russia influenced the Brexit decision through Facebook ads, an article he wrote with Guardian reporter Carol Cadwallader. Both appeared to have been paid by the initiative for this article, but right after it, Facebook revealed that Russia linked accounts and spent a total of 97 cents on Brexit ads. This is very similar to what Robert Mueller and the Senate Intelligence Committee put out about how a few thousand dollars in Russian Facebook ads, most of which occurred after the election and had little to say about Trump or Clinton, and a full quarter of which were seen by no one, somehow swung the election to Donald Trump. Another Institute expert is a guy by the name of Mark Galeotti. And he invented a whole Russian military doctrine of hybrid cyber warfare out of thin air in 2013. And he attributed it to a paper written that year by Russian General Valery Gerasimov, if I'm actually pronouncing it right. For years, this article was an article of faith within the entire transatlantic defense community. In other words, Galeotti claimed that Russia was conducting hybrid warfare based on this paper by the Russian general. However, in March of 2018, this guy, Galeotti, was required to retract his entire claim about this Russian hybrid warfare, which had every military asset in the Western world responding to it, because it was totally fake. That was the result of an article which was actually published by the U.S. Army Military Review. So the Integrity Initiative, which is now being exposed, and you can sort of, I mean, I hope I give you enough of a sense of how crazy this whole thing is, but also how determined it is to change everybody's minds about the Russians. It's only a small part of what's become a fairly massive hybrid warfare operation, not in Russia, but in the Western world. And it's targeting anybody who dissents in the populations of the targeted nations. It got a really big lease on life following the Ukraine coup in 2014 and following the initial rumblings in Britain itself about Brexit. Hillary Clinton has been quoted extensively on this, saying that the British and the U.S. utterly failed to solve their coup in Ukraine as a triumph of democracy, which of course it wasn't. And she attributed this to what she called superior Russian social media and disinformation regimes. Now, anybody thinking about it who knows the real story would say that when you employ neo-Nazis as the mercenaries in your coup, and anybody knows about it, that sort of has a big impact on the democracy applause meter. It's also not accidental that Christopher Steele, even as far back as that time, was serving as a big advisor to Nuland and the Obama administration concerning the Ukraine coup, and he delivered over 100 memos and missives to the State Department concerning operations in that coup in Ukraine. So, you know, looking at the history in the United States, we come really in the modern history to Barack Obama. When he came into office in 2008, the problem was, how do you manage the financial collapse and the bailout and prevent a revolt of the American population because of what you just did? So basically, he proposed to attack, even back then, anything that was truthful as a conspiracy theory. And his sort of person he put out there as the face of this for public debate was a guy by the name of Cass Sunstein, who was Samantha Power's husband. And he wrote an article in the January 2008 Harvard and University of Chicago Law Reviews, in which he focused largely on debunking what he called fake conspiracy theories about 9/11. And in that article, he cites as his authority the guy who is really the godfather or rabbi for George Soros, the British agent Sir Karl Popper. And he advocates that what should happen is the government should intervene directly in internet chat rooms in the form of what he calls, quote, cognitive infiltration. And he suggests that private parties actually working for the government get on the internet, get into chat rooms, and, you know, basically intervene on people pushing the conspiracy theories directly. This in turn will cause what he calls cognitive dissonance, and that will make anybody who's in these conspiracy forums actually politically impotent. In other words, peddling false and fake propaganda within these internet forums. If you look at the activities of QAnon, something which people are familiar with, which is targeted Trump supporters, you know, really, really quite extensively, you get the idea of how this stuff actually works. You know, basically, as far as I have reviewed it, what happened with QAnon is that before the midterms, when people really needed to come out, a whole bunch of Trump people got stuck in this internet video game, Pokemon type thing, which features clues about the coup and what was happening in the coup, allegedly from some high on intelligence source called Q. And the claims which were made were entirely fake, one of which was that Robert Mueller is really on Trump's side. And therefore, you don't have to do anything in terms of getting out there and thinking about how we're going to turn this mess around. That's a pretty good example of cognitive infiltration. Suffice it to say that with the money being allocated from Congress and the NDAA, and the money which has been allocated by NATO and Europe, in looking at all this, what you see now with the money turned on is that you can actually name about 60 distinct organizations, big ones, which are doing nothing but information warfare and psyops against the population of the United States, filling your brain with a bunch of fake, stupid nonsense. And that's just the public side of the operation. Max Blumenthal, the reporter I cited who's done such excellent work on the Integrity Initiative, has compared it to Operation Mockingbird. And that was the collaboration of intelligence agencies, compromised politicians, the national news media, employing over 400 American journalists to produce fake news for the CIA during the Cold War. And I think he's right about that comparison. Now, the phony Steele dossier and the Integrity Initiative involve the same British intelligence networks revolving around Sir Richard Dearlove, the former head of MI6. Very same networks. Dr. Victor Madeira, who's one of the key staffers at the Integrity Initiative, used to work directly for Dearlove and Sir Christopher Andrew at the Cambridge Intelligence Forum. Andrew Wood, the former UK ambassador to Russia, close Dearlove friend and advisor to Christopher Steele's Orbis Business Intelligence Company, is listed as a specialist team member of the Integrity Initiative. Drew Foxall of the Henry Jackson Society, where Dearlove is the leading light, is listed as, quote, inner core of the Institute. Both the Integrity Initiative and Christopher Steele traffic in intelligence-wise targeted Russia, and they employ a media echo chamber to legitimate these lies through media retainers and witting government accomplices. Steele's Business Orbis Intelligence in 2011 listed among its special skills as, quote, creating public opinion groundswells and, quote, delivering targeted political campaigns. Richard Dearlove, if you know his history, is an old hand at this. When he led MI6, it was Dearlove who famously vouched for the Doctor dossier, which said that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and he collaborated on that with George Tenet from our CIA in one of the 20th century's most deadly intelligence lies. Steele, as I kind of referenced before, has sort of a less developed pedigree in the wilderness of lies, if you will. Alexander Litvinenko, Steele was the case officer for an MI6. Litvinenko defected from Russia and went to work for the Russian oligarch Boris Berezovsky.
It was here between sets that oligarchs like Berezovsky managed to get their hands on new riches. Here that he was given control of Sibneft, Russia's third largest oil company, for just $100 million.
Но 100 миллионов долларов у нас не было. Были десятки миллионов долларов, больше половины суммы, которая необходима была, но всей суммы не было. И я поехал на Запад. Я встретился вот с господином Соросом в Америке.
Once he took up residence in Britain, Steele ran Litvinenko, and one could basically think also Berezovsky, both of whom went to work in a huge campaign against Putin from Britain, in which Litvinenko was characterized in the press as Berezovsky's flamethrower. He was famously murdered using polonium poison in 2006. And what happened is that they orchestrated a statement in which he lays in his deathbed, and he blames Putin for killing him in a broadcast which was sent all across the world. It turns out that this broadcast was co-produced by Bell Pottinger, a British public relations firm, which has been completely disgraced following the revelation that it did such wonderful things as making fake Al-Qaeda propaganda films for the war in Iraq on behalf of the CIA. There's Litvinenko's father blames organized crime for Litvinenko's murder, specifically organized crime associates of Berezovsky. And Berezovsky himself, again, who Christopher Steele ran, was suicided in Britain in 2013. That's quite a background for Christopher Steele, the author of the dubious dossier about Donald Trump. Now, all of Steele's operations in Britain were mentored by Dearlove. He was in on them, completely ran them, and he vouched for Christopher Steele throughout the Five Eyes intelligence community. Dearlove is also associated with a British firm called Hakluyt. Hakluyt is known in the British press as a wonderful and lucrative retirement home for former MI6 agents. Stefan Halper, the guy who was sent to entrap Trump campaign volunteers, particularly George Papadopoulos and Carter Page in London, is an advisor to Hakluyt and a longtime colleague of Christopher Steele's. Alexander Downer, the Australian ambassador, who was the guy who tried to entrap Papadopoulos, sits on Hakluyt's board. Luke Harding, the journalist who wrote the book Collusion to salvage Christopher Steele's reputation and recently got caught completely fabricating a story in The Guardian about Julian Assange and Paul Manafort, works for both Hakluyt and Steele's Orbis Political Intelligence. Similarly, Pablo Miller, the MI6 handler of Sergei Skripal, has worked with Christopher Steele since their days in MI6, and he also worked for Hakluyt. Finally, the mysterious Maltese professor, Joseph Mitzvah, whose job was to flip Papadopoulos by giving him a job in London and then offering the Trump campaign access to, quote, Putin's inner circle, runs in the very same intelligence networks. Now, with all of that in mind, you have, you know, basically, I've given you the story on the British side now, a bit more than what you've probably heard before about the Trump coup operation. How should we be looking at that operation, you know, and thinking about it as to what it was? Well, the first point I want to make is that all the chronologies of this operation, which you have been presented with so far in the public press and even in the congressional reports, are off by many, many months. If you think about it, how's the way this is traditionally reported? It goes like this. The FBI opened an investigation in July of 2016 at the same time that Christopher Steele began working with Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS was working with the Democratic National Committee and Clinton after it was hired in April of 2016 by the DNC. Fusion had worked previously for the Republicans to dig information up against Donald Trump. The dirty and very corrupt Justice Department got a FISA warrant against Carter Page by lying to the FISA court in October. All the time, two FBI agents, one an attorney, the other the case agent on the Trump-Russia organization, were engaged in a very hot extramarital affair, were communicating that they hated Trump over their cell phones and were collaborating on an insurance policy to prevent his election. After the election, the Steele dossier was made public by some weird operation involving BuzzFeed, James Clapper, James Comey, and John McCain. Isn't that kind of the basic scenario you remember, the one that's been endlessly reported? Look, this is only a minuscule part of the real story. Christopher Steele and Richard Dearlove had pre-written in many respects what became the Trump dossier in something called Project Charlemagne, a dossier about how the Russians had manipulated the June 2016 British Brexit vote and were manipulating elections throughout Europe well prior to the 2016 election in the United States. Steele was listed as a paid FBI informant as of February 2016. John Brennan convened a task force at CIA headquarters, a very questionable act under U.S. law, as of March 2016, and was receiving intelligence from the British about Trump, screening it, and then forwarding it to the FBI. A large part of it involves the hacked emails of a State Department official named Robert Otto, who was considered to be the U.S. biggest current expert on Russia, and who was communicating throughout 2016 with British intelligence and key actors in the coup, including John McCain's friend, David Kramer, who leaked the Steele dossier to BuzzFeed in coordination with British intelligence, James Clapper, and Jim Comey. Most of the U.S. operations against Trump, as Devin Nunez emphasizes, but has never been able to fill out because it's all classified, came out of the State Department, not the Justice Department, and were particularly overseen by John Weiner and Victoria Nuland. The State Department is the center of British operations in the United States, even more so than the CIA. In October of 2016, 1 month before the U.S. election, Christopher Steele held a full-scale briefing at the State Department, and he handed out stuff to select journalists and others present. That's according to Victoria Nuland's testimony before the United States Senate, something you don't see played up very much. The public face of this operation, the cutout and the sacrificial lamb, was Fusion GPS, but the actual controllers of the operation were sitting in London. Let's look at Fusion GPS. Bruce Orr, the now demoted third man in the U.S. Department of Justice Criminal Division hierarchy, is married to Nellie Orr, who worked for Fusion. Both Orrs had a longstanding relationship with Christopher Steele based on investigations of Russian organized crime dating back decades. Neil King, who works for Fusion GPS, is married to Sheila Murray, who was Barack Obama's senior policy advisor at the White House, having previously worked for years for Vice President Biden. Otherwise, most of Fusion staff is composed of former reporters from major national newspapers who know how to feed tips and hot stories to their former friends or those they hire, which they do, to put bylines on the propaganda which Fusion produces as ordered up by their paying clients. A major client for Fusion's products has always been law enforcement. It is a major drop point for feeding and amplifying stories planted by the intelligence community out to its network of journalists. Fusion, therefore, has had a professional relationship with at least Christopher Steele's Orbis Business Intelligence in Britain since 2010, if not other entities associated with Sir Richard Dearlove. In other words, they are a propaganda front for British intelligence for pay in the United States. But what I really want to emphasize here is just how preposterous the Steele report actually is. The dossier, the dirty dossier itself, is flat out totally and utterly false, a stinking, hideous fraud. Christopher Steele, in all his subsequent testimony, describes it as unverified raw intelligence, and he refuses to vouch for its accuracy. Even its most fervent champions, such as Michael Isikoff, who met personally with Steele in September of 2016, now doubt that the document has any veracity at all, and yet it contains the central legends of the entirety of Russiagate. After the election, Tom Steyer, George Soros, and other Silicon Valley billionaires provided some $70 million to attempt to put meat on Steele's work product. A big part of this exercise, I think, is to create enough atmospherics and smoke to prevent the public from concluding that those who believe this crap are stark raving mad and belong in mentalist institutions rather than having any say in our government. That is also a large part of the function assigned to Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Now let's think about this. Believing that this dossier is true requires you to assume that Christopher Steele had 32 deep sources inside the Russian government. What they allegedly told him is specific enough in time and content to identify them. You have to further assume that the British government, therefore, was willing to roll up this entire network, since the clear intention was for the dossier's claims about Trump to be published as widely as possible. By any account, Britain and the United States together do not have 32 highly placed sources inside the deepest circles of the Russian government, nor would they ever make them public in this way or with this extremely sloppy tradecraft. The dossier, however, uses aspects of readily available public information, such as the sale of 19% of the energy company Rosneft. That was the alleged bribe offered to Carter Page for lifting sanctions, to concoct what is an entirely fictional narrative of high crimes and misdemeanors. On January 2nd, Lee Smith over at The Federalist wrote a very significant article sort of demonstrating this hypothesis. He contends, and he provides the documentary evidence, that most of the dossier is simply drawn from public source postings, some of which are Ukrainian and Russian, with embellishments by Steele to change the actual events reported in these news sources to nefarious crimes. In other words, there are no real Russian sources, period. Others have made a similar comment about the dossier's most salacious and incendiary allegation that Donald Trump cavorted with prostitutes in Moscow who urinated on the bed in which the Obamas slept, the so-called P allegation. But this even seems to be simply a reject and revival of a 2009 propaganda story about Silvio Berlusconi, who allegedly spent the night with a prostitute in a hotel room in Rome, defiling Putin's bed. No one has ever said that the British are original. So thinking about that, a totally fake story has dominated the popular perceptions of many people in the United States for over a 2.5 year period, an obvious fake. The only reason why it survived is because very powerful people told some people in Washington, you have to believe this. If you don't believe it, you won't have a career right here in Washington, D.C. This, unfortunately, is the way much of D.C. functions. So I've told you something that's kind of a long and a little complicated story, but I think the facts are very relevant to everything we're facing today. It means basically that people have to get out of the fishbowl created by the media, most of which right now is fake.
Documents purportedly leaked from the UK-funded influence network, the Integrity Initiative, once again apparently expose how the group planned to counter so-called Russian propaganda. British opposition MP Chris Williamson, whose party leader was also allegedly targeted by the organisation, conducted his own investigation into how the group and its parent organisation operate.
Well, it's not a figment of imagination. This organisation definitely exists. These lists exist. We know that they have swung into operation, for example, into the issue of Pedro Baños, who was the preferred candidate for the Spanish director of their homeland security.
You've written to the Spanish Prime Minister.
I've wrote to the Spanish Prime Minister about this, because what on earth is a state-funded, British state-funded organisation doing, interfering in the internal governmental appointments in a fellow European democracy? This is an absolute democratic outrage, and you know, I'm therefore a little bit troubled and surprised, frankly, that we're not seeing any real pickup in the the mainstream media in this country. There's been a passing reference on the BBC to this issue. The government ministers seem to be, you know, trying their very best to close this story down, saying there's no truth in it, it's complete sort of fabrication and so on. But we know from these hacked documents, we know as well from my own sort of investigations and visit to the Institute for State
Press. I want to hear about that. What was it like? What, you went to the registered address of the Institute?
There were two addresses. They have a registered address in Scotland, and it's at the end of this remote dirt track, actually, and it was the dead of night when we arrived there, and it was rather spooky, I've got to say. And when I reached the end of this dirt track, I was confronted with this semi-derelict mill. There were one or two lights on in a couple of the units there, and I did speak to some of the people who had businesses located at the mill. They'd never heard of the Institute of Statecraft. One of them said his dad had mentioned something that was in the newspaper about some shady organisation based in Auchtermuchty, which is the village close by. But that was as much as he knew about it. And I then went to their offices in London, just near Temple Station. And bear in mind, this is a state-funded organisation. Bearing in mind as well that I am a member of Parliament here, and I thought, well, I'll try and ask some questions directly to the organisation, see if they can clarify anything. And I was met with a very hostile reception. I mean, shouted at and the door slammed in my face.
Well, Integrity Initiative earlier admitted its documents had been hacked but denied any covert type of activities. Meanwhile, the latest batch of documents suggests the group's been discussing plans to counter Russian and Chinese propaganda by getting the film industry on board. Ilya Petrenko investigates where a good film turns into propaganda.
We've shown you papers that could shed light on how taxes paid by people in this country may be used to stop what Russia's up to, there and way beyond. By all means, a freshly leaked memo could help clarify the very means.
We'll need to go beyond old-style military romps and get entertainment outputs that draw out the nature of 21st century conflict, diffuse across society without clear boundaries at times.
For now, no one can say for sure who wrote it, but this very file's title bears the name Victor Madeira. He's a leading researcher at the parent body of Integrity Initiative, and his name has been seen in earlier leaks. Anyway, the author, whoever it really was, wants to get as many of the elements of the entertainment industry as possible on board, all in a bid to deal with all that propaganda from authoritarian strongholds. He suggests that experts should articulate
how US and other global entertainment powerhouses can improve and coordinate so that output messaging converges to bolster shared democratic values, but with locally relevant content.
See? It's okay to feed people propaganda through movies, TV shows, music, as long as it's the right propaganda. Let's read further into the paper.
It would be a grave oversight, I feel, to focus exclusively on the USA. The Five Eyes countries, the US, UK, Canada, Australia and New Zealand, have unrivaled influence. Let's not forget other core players worldwide. Even Russian and Chinese entertainment communities should not be out of bounds for Western support. For example, the fantastic Russian film Leviathan.
Once you look at these documents, what you find out is that they're actually performing the very definition of propaganda by creating something that they call clusters, which is essentially trying to pull together people from Hollywood, news media, politicians, think tanks, all kinds of thought leaders, and to give them the same message, which is an anti-Russia message, that they can push out across Europe and into the United States. And so when you start trying to organize large groups of people to all say the same thing, Tyrell, what else is there to define propaganda? This other story that has come out that we've been covering, of course, and you guys have been covering so heavily, in the Alabama special election that took place with Roy Moore, right? And it's the exact same tactic that was used there. Now, it wasn't by this group necessarily. It was by a different group. But it was the exact same tactic, which was, you know, create disinformation, take that disinformation, use it to smear this candidate, pass it to the media. The media reports as if that information is accurate. It's the exact same strategy taking place in different places. This is a story that has not gotten any coverage on national mainstream media in the United States, even though it is an incredibly important story, as this group has been in Washington, D.C. It has met with members of the administration. It has attempted to run this same kind of campaign here that it's running in the U.K., and yet it doesn't make headlines at all. So when you omit stories, when you refuse to discuss them to keep them out of the public conscious, I think it's very easy to manipulate.